Hello and welcome back to In the Corner. We are here with a very, very jam-packed episode. This will be episode 24. I'm Cash. We got so much to talk about. We had the announcement of Dana White, Turki Alsik, and TKO launching a new boxing league, which this is literally going to completely change the business and the whole inner workings of everything in the sport. I don't think people understand how groundbreaking this is, what it could potentially mean for the future of boxing. We had a ton of press conferences this week. You had Canelo Skull today. You had the New York City Times Square card. You had KSI pancake slapping Dylan Danis. We've got some more updates on the Gervonta Davis Lamont Roach situation. And out of nowhere, we had the announcement of Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano 3 today, July 11th, live on Netflix. All women's card, Madison Square Garden, New York City. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy. I cannot wait for that fight. They are literally lightning in a bottle when they're in the ring together. I can't wait to see this trilogy finally close out. In addition to that, we've got a huge fight weekend ahead of us, y'all. UFC 313, Alex Pereira, maybe the face of the UFC, or at least one of them, returned against Magomed Ankalaev, his toughest fight maybe ever. Huge fight. Las Vegas, Sin City, Justin Gaethje returns in the co-main against Rafael Fiziev after Dan Hooker had to pull out with an injury. We've got some other good cards. Speaking of women's cards, you got Natasha Jonas, Lauren Price at the Royal Albert Hall tomorrow. Huge card there. You got some other good cards here and there scattered throughout. MVP is in Canada. You've got Golden Boy Fight Night tonight. You get an IBA card in Moscow. A Wasserman card with Harlem Eubank, Tyrone Maqueda. It's a brilliant fight. And a Pro Box TV card on Saturday as well, headlined by Arnold Kagai versus Joey Gonzalez. We have a ton to talk about. Let's talk, and we got more than that too. Let's start off with the big thing, which is the TKO Boxing League. So, essentially, it was announced that His Excellency and The Ring and Sella, whatever, are partnering up with TKO to launch a new boxing league that will follow the UFC model. It'll be headed by Dana White, who runs UFC, and Nick Khan, who runs WWE. Listen, as for if this is good or bad news, we don't really know yet. Look at the good stuff. They're going to follow the UFC model, which means they're going to try and get to only one boxing champion. They are going to have the fight, all fight the best. You know, it's going to have that same kind of model. UFC and WWE, let's be honest, those are easily the two biggest combat sports promotions in the world. If you count WWE, I think you should in terms of promotion-wise, it is. Is it real sports? No, it's sports entertainment, but you can't deny that they have another level of fan base, of promotion, of production, of storytelling that is unparalleled. And UFC, in terms of like genuine sports, is definitely number one. So I think that, you know, putting those heads together with His Excellency's vision for the sport in combination with, you know, the fan base and the marketing of the WWE and the structure of the UFC, I think you have a brilliant product there that you could be putting out. Now, the question is, how does this make sense in terms of some of the other promoters that are going on? Because as we know, let's be honest, His Excellency is the guy that brought everyone together. He is the reason we had these big fights. There's no doubt about it. But he couldn't have done that without the help of Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn and Oscar De La Hoya and Bob Arum and Ben Shalom and everyone involved, and Spencer Brown as well. I mean, he's worked with promoters since the beginning, and it does start to feel like recently with his, you know, buying of the Ring magazine and him putting on these new cards and getting his own sponsor like the Fatal Fury game that, he's taking more of a promotional role as well as signing fighters. Canelo Alvarez, Teofimo Lopez, Dan Haney, Ryan Garcia, those guys are all signed on deals with His Excellency and Ring Magazine and Real Season. I know that like Ryan and Tio are still have their own promoters at the moment, of course. But, you know, I mean, he's starting to lock these guys down. And he's been doing that with his deals with AJ and Fury and Usyk and Crawford. You know, all the big names he's signing. But now, with guys like Canelo and Devin Haney, at least, it seems that he's starting to do it without a big promoter involved. So it's going to get very, very interesting pretty soon and see what he's capable of doing. It seems that they were teasing that Canelo and Crawford is going to be the next. It's going to be the first TKO event, possibly. He also mentioned Alcatraz, but I don't know if that'll be TKO. It's getting a little bit confusing here because even though they're all His Excellency, they're all pretty much the same team putting it together. It's you got Riyadh Season, you got Ring Magazine, and now you have TKO, which are all led by him, but they're all technically like different promotions in a way. So it's really confusing. It's really odd. You know, they don't all align under one company. I'm hopeful that pretty soon Riot Season and Ring Magazine will just be kind of like subsidiaries. I mean, not subsidiaries, but at least in the promoting and marketing sector of it, it'll be, you know, they'll just be like kind of side things and supporting sponsors of what will be the TKO boxing events. I want to know if there's going to be a consistent schedule here, because it seems like they're talking about, oh yeah, we're going to do these super fights. I mean, are you taking fighters from other promoters? Like, are you going to do Canelo and Crawford? Are you signing them there? Because that would make sense. But otherwise, you're not going to be able to have all these fighters unless you, of course, sign new fighters and bring them up, which they'll be able to, but it'll take years to foster that kind of talent. You know, are you going to try and make co-promotion of this? Like I mentioned, Teofimo Lopez, Ryan Garcia, Anthony Joshua. These guys are signed to appear on Riot Season events exclusively, but they're still co-promoted by Matchroom, Top Rank, Golden Boy, etc. So is that still the plan, or are you going to straight up steal them from them? I mean, in Turkey, who has a great relationship with all these promoters, talking about, oh yeah, we're going to do an event at Alcatraz. Maybe me and Dana will just lock up all the other promoters there. We're going to crush everyone. Which I get it, you know, like from a business sense, yeah, we're going to try and be number one. But I'm also kind of confused because are you not trying to, have you not been partnering with them? Are you not going to continue to partner them? I can't wait until we get to hear from particularly Eddie Hearn, because he does the most interviews, and to hear from Frank Warren and everyone else what they think about this new boxing league, because they kind of helped His Excellency get here, and it seems like they now may now be getting pushed out. In addition to the sanctions, stuff like the WBC, WBA, they've been supporting Riot Season and all that, and His Excellency, and now they could be getting pushed out. It is so interesting. This has the potential to completely take over. Dana White is one of the best businessmen in all of sports. I mean, what he's done with UFC is unbelievable. The cons that comes into it, as in addition to pushing other people out, is, you know, Dana White, he's great at building the UFC, but what's the one knock the UFC gets the most? It's their fighter pay. The main difference between boxing and UFC, and why boxing is still as big as it is because they have the capability to pay these guys the big bucks and make them superstars. UFC is superstars, sure, but how many of those guys are really on the same level as some of the big superstars? Conor McGregor is, maybe Jon Jones, Alex Pereira is pretty big. You have guys like Israel Adesanya, some bigger names, but I mean, when we look at it. Can't those guys aren't gonna they're not gonna command the same level of money as a boxer can. Someone look at Canelo, he's fighting William Scull and he's probably getting paid $100 million for it. It's William Scull. My goodness, I'm worried that the UFC model works so well because the promotion is in charge of it, not the fighter. That's the difference between UFC and boxing. When you're talking about, oh, there's a UFC card on Saturday. No. You don't say that. You say, oh, Ryan Garcia is fighting on Saturday. There's the difference. You're not talking about, oh man, I can't wait to watch Dricus du Plessis fight on Saturday. No, I can't wait to watch UFC 312, Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland fight. You're not talking about, man, I can't wait to see the Golden Boy card with Ryan Garcia and Rolly Romero. You're saying, I can't wait to see Ryan Garcia fight. That's it. That's the difference. There's the name in boxing and there's the company in UFC. And what I worry is that same approach is going to be taken to boxing and fighters are going to get underpaid. Because I'll tell you right now, fighters will not go over to this new league unless they're getting the bang for their buck. With His Excellency, I would hope that he's going to try and pay them well. I mean, that's something he's already said. Like, listen, I know how you pay your guys. We're doing better than that. But I'm also seeing that His Excellency is kind of going to hand his reins over to Dana White, and he's going to fund Dana White, but Dana White is not going to use that funding to support the fighters. He's going to use it to fund himself and the company and grow the company and get sponsors and get another level of production and getting all this stuff. He's not going to use it to pay these fighters extremely good money. I also wonder, how much can Dana White really be involved? How much can Nick Khan really be involved? They've got their own massive companies to run. I mean, it's going to happen that these boxing and UFC events are going to overlap. So I don't know how we're going to be able to, you know, Dana White can't be everywhere. I assume that the boxing is going to have to be his second priority. I feel like there's, and His Excellency's got so much other stuff going on. I feel like you got to bring in another guy who's just, you know, the dedicated, maybe not in charge, but the dedicated guy to run day-to-day operations. I don't know who that would be, but it all remains to be seen. There's still so many questions. We don't know yet what, even if there's the name of this, we just know it's, we're calling it the TKO Boxing League. I don't think that's actually going to be its name. We know that they're trying to get away with the sanctioning bodies. We know they're trying to, you know, start over and just do one belt per division, one champion, which I love. It's just, it remains to be seen if in 5 years, are we going to forget about WBC and WBA and WBO and IBF and Matchroom and Golden Boy and Top Rank and Queensberry? Are we only going to be talking about these big, this one-off, like similar to UFC? We're not even going to call it boxing anymore. We're going to call it TKO or whatever. I mean, it is going to get very, very interesting. We don't even know the scope that we're dealing with right here. We don't know how everyone else is going to react. We know that Bob Arum and Mauricio Suleiman and some other boxing powerheads had a conversation, had a meeting in Vegas a couple months ago talking about this new deal and saying, how can we combat it? That was the verbiage used, combat. Doesn't mean how are we going to react, how are we going to combat it? These guys have been working with His Excellency. They see he may be trying to cut them out here. I mean, I'm saying it. Shit could get real. Not like, oh, you know, they're going to sue each other. It's possible, but I mean, it's going to be really, really interesting how this all plays out. We still don't have many answers. Yeah, it just remains to be seen what the infrastructure will look like in the next year or so. We don't know when the first event is or what fighters have been signed. I'm sure we're going to hear about it gradually. I mean, every single day there's new news or a new press conference all related to His Excellency. I mean, it's just unbelievable how much he's taking control of the sport, for good and for bad. So it all remains to be seen in the next few weeks. And the fact next few months, next few years, what this really means for the sport of boxing. We talked about that a good bit. Let's talk about Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano 3. Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano 1, April 2022, sold out Madison Square Garden. One of the best fights ever. Easily the best, well, maybe not easily the best women's fight, because the rematch happened November of this past year in Arlington, Texas, Dallas, Texas, on the Jake Paul Mike Tyson undercard co-main event. So the first fight was very close, it was spectacular. Katie Taylor won, and we didn't see an immediate rematch. They tried to do a rematch in 2023 after they both each had one or two more fights. Didn't come to fruition. You know, a rematch was definitely wanted, but didn't feel needed. It did feel like, oh man, we got to see this again. There's no way we can't have it again. But it also wasn't like, you need to run this back next, like no other options. Because it was very close, but Katie won. It's okay. However, when you look in November, not a lot of people thought that Katie won that fight. That was a very controversial decision there. I thought that Amanda Serrano definitely won. Close, yeah, but I thought Amanda Serrano surely did enough. She hurt Katie more. Felt like she landed more in a lot of the rounds. Katie even had a point deducted, I remember. I think it was for headbutting or something like that. Amanda Serrano had a huge cut over her eye, of course. That one, it felt, okay, we need to do a rematch next. And, you know, it felt like they weren't talking about it for a while. She's been anything bad, but we weren't talking about it for a while. I mean, Eddie Hearn and Jake Paul are still involved in a lawsuit. And they're still working together, which you never hear. You never see. Matchroom and MVP, they said that, yeah, we're in negotiations. Just looking good. Eddie said, yeah, it looks like it'll be this summer in America, likely in New York. You know, that was just last week. And it's like, okay, cool. And then, boom, it just gets announced today. And by the way, the timing of this announcement is very, very important. Tomorrow night, Ben Shalom puts on an event at Royal Albert Hall. All women's card, talking about it as the best women's sporting event of the year. And the day before, MVP undermines it with this bombshell. Another interesting thing here, doesn't look like Eddie Hearn is going to be involved again, as he really should be. This is going to be an all-women's event. It will be live on Netflix. That's the most important part. It seems like Netflix is here to stay in boxing with MVP. And, you know, I love it. I mean, Netflix is going to do another massive event, and it doesn't even have Jake Paul or Mike Tyson in the name. Yes, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano were involved in the last one. But I love how big this fight is and how great it is for women's sports and women's boxing. Amanda Serrano is set to be the highest paid athlete in women's sports. Not like of all time, you know. I'm sure that'd have to be somebody like Serena Williams, who's probably made more lifetime career money. But I'm sure there's somebody else as well that I'm forgetting. But just for one event, you know, one deal, we don't know how much it is, but she will be the highest paid, beating out Ronda Rousey's record. This will be on a Friday, July 11th. Madison Square Garden, same arena as the first one. We haven't gotten a big boxing match there. We haven't gotten a boxing match there in the main arena since that fight 3 years ago, which is unbelievable that we haven't gotten one since then. We've had UFC cards. We've had a lot of boxing cards at the theater at MSG. We've had a lot of fights in Brooklyn recently, the Barclays Center. But for some reason, we haven't been getting big fights at MSG. I hope that they can correct that and we can get more. But yeah, I'm really, really excited to see this fight go down. It's going to be awesome. I love that Netflix is back involved. It'll be for Katie's undisputed super lightweight championship. To be honest, in my eyes, it's weird because both decisions I didn't think were right. I thought that the first fight, I kind of thought was more of a draw, but it wasn't mad at Katie winning. I was totally okay with it. The second fight, I thought Amanda definitely won that one. So it's not even, it doesn't even feel right to say, oh, Katie's up 2-0 or it's one apiece or they're both towards it. It's just, it's too hard to figure out who's really ahead after two fights. Almost like Bivol and Beterbiev after that first one. After the second one, Bivol certainly won. But after the first fight, it was like, man, who really won? And that's kind of how it feels with Katie and Amanda. But hopefully the trilogy, something drastic and definitive happens in that event. I can't wait. It'll be an all-women sporting event. Shadeja Green tweeted at Clarissa Shields saying, oh, we got, you know, like, why aren't you accepting or whatever? Listen, that needs to be the co-main event. That's the perfect fight. I thought of Clarissa Shields because I'm thinking this is going to be on Netflix. You're going to need to have a big event. I mean, women's fighters are not the most in highest demand, so I can totally see this as an all-world championship card. And who's the biggest star in women's boxing outside of Katie and Amanda? Maybe even bigger than them. It's Clarissa Shields. And who can she fight? Talked a lot about who she could fight. Not a lot of options. One option that wouldn't be a rematch or a crossover fight, maybe the only one of that sort, is Shadeja Green, who has a belt at 168. And she's with MVP. It makes all the sense in the world that fight happens next on this card. I would hope that Clarissa Shields accepts it. It's brilliant for her. It's great spotlight. I'm just worried that her ego about not being the main event could get in the way, and I'm worried that Dmitry Salida could get in the way about it not being his event. But they totally should work together and make that happen because it's huge. As to what else could go on that card, I don't really know at the moment. To be honest, the winners of Mayor Ryan 2 and Jonas Price, I know that's a boxer and Top Rank and Matchroom potentially situation there. But that'd be awesome to go on this card as an undisputed championship. And then I'm not really sure who else you could throw on there. MVP has got one or two other fighters. They've got female fighters. They have a Puerto Rican fighter, Crystal Rosado. They have a Canadian fighter in Tampa Bold who fights tomorrow night. I'm sure they'll appear on the prelims. I would like to have at least four championship fights, and I bet it can happen. So let's see them lock it down. July 11th is the date. Save the date. Very excited. Okay, let's talk about these press conferences that have been going on the last few days. So the first one we want to talk about a little bit. On Tuesday, we had KSI vs. Dylan Danis for Manchester, March 29th. This was about what you expected. Dylan Danis, the one thing he is good at is talking. It's weird because he's both good and horrible at talking. He messes up his words all the time. He gets a little bit angsty up there, a little bit nervous, and his voice cracks, and he's not super confident in what he's saying. But the guy is funny. He's really good at trolling. He's really good at getting under your skin. On Twitter, he's great. In person, not as good, but he's still the better talker. The only thing he's good at is trash talking. He sucks at fighting. KSI, I thought he held his own fine in the press conference, but, you know, was not as good a trash talker. Had some odd moments. Just want to mention, it seems like KSI may be fighting in June on Alcatraz. He said that in the rematch, I don't know where that word came from, in the press conference afterwards, being interviewed, not at the press conference, but afterwards. Someone asked him about it, saying, oh, it seems that you may be fighting in Alcatraz. I think that they just had the wrong idea. Know that he's going to be involved with it potentially, but just assumed, oh, he must be fighting. And KSI was just like, oh, it seems you know more than I do. So it kind of confirms, yeah, he's probably going to be fighting on Alcatraz, which I love. I love that. I'm not mad at it. It's a little bit funny because Turkey says he doesn't want to do YouTube fights. I think he doesn't want to do Jake Paul fights for whatever reason because he fought Mike Tyson, which I get. But anyways, this press conference, you know, it felt like it was just what you expected. It was only them two up there. Not even like just the fighters, just the main event fighters and their promoters. It was only KSI and Dylan Danis on stage, which I loved. Really good back and forth. And then KSI slaps him with a pancake. This is obviously inspired by the Chris Eubank Connor Ben slap. Where he slapped him with an egg, the egg contamination. KSI just did a pancake because it was pancake day on Tuesday, apparently. And pancake you can slap someone with hard. So that's why he did it. It looked more like a unfolded crepe. It was not really much protection behind the pancake, behind that bread, I guess you could say. But, you know, he gets his get back. You know, as you remember 2.5 years ago when they first faced off, Dylan Danis threw a coffee at KSI's face, which would definitely hurt a lot more than a pancake. But, you know, I mean, he's got the one up on him there. It was an entertaining press conference. Not really much to say. Darren Till was meant to be there with Darren Stewart, but he fell ill, which I hope is okay. They're only a couple weeks out from the fight, so hopefully that doesn't matter too much. He also mentioned that he was going to fight either Darren Stewart or Haseem Rockman Jr. I'm glad he took Darren Stewart because Haseem Rockman Jr. is not really that great. But yeah, that goes down March 29th. Let's talk about New York City Times Square. We had a good but less exciting press conference than I was expecting for Ring Magazine's card on May 2nd in Times Square. So at this press conference, we of course had the three fights that will be featured on that card. Ryan Garcia versus Rolly Romero in the main event for the WBA regular welterweight world title, which is pointless. Devin Haney, Jose Ramirez, also a welterweight. And then Teofimo Lopez versus Arnold Barboza Jr. for the WBO and Ring Magazine super lightweight world championships. The fight on the card that is definitely the most competitive and also the most spice. Teofimo was on one on Tuesday. He was very funny, full, you know, character he was putting on as the takeover. Really entertaining. You know, at one point, Devin asked him if he was on drugs. You know, he was just super funny. Ryan went at Teofimo a little bit, which I found so weird because they talk online a good bit, but then when in person, they always dap up, and they both, in fact, are training with Eddie Reynoso, at least in some way. So it feels so weird. They're talking about his potential fight, and they're cussing each other out on stage and then backstage, being cool, and maybe even training together. It just makes no sense at all. But, you know, regardless, Ryan and Rolly didn't go at it as much as I was expecting. We didn't really expect Devin and Jose to, but not even Devin and Ryan. I mean, I remember there was a point where they were standing on stage, like only a few feet apart, and I was shocked. Neither of them even said a word to each other. It just felt so weird, and there was no security around. Like it really feels weird that Devin and Ryan have so much like hate for one of each other, for each other, and so much history and so much beef and such a big rivalry, and they just don't say anything to each other, and were completely kept their cool, acted like the other one wasn't even there at all. I was just totally shocked. I mean, they really are both focused. We know Devin has always been more disciplined, and it seems that Ryan really has turned a new leaf. And has, you know, made some good changes in his life and seems locked in. And he and Rolly were both very respectful of each other. I was hoping there'd be a good back and forth because I think Rolly and Ryan are both hilarious. I did like see that Ryan had a shirt that said "Got Austrian." That was pretty funny. Yeah, I'm excited for these fights. I think they're all good matchups. I think that Teofimo and Arnold Barboza is actually a really competitive fight. I don't know if it's one that Teofimo wins. Barboza's just been on such a good run. He doesn't have a fan-friendly style per se, but outboxed Jose Ramirez in November, closely but definitely beat Jack Catterall in February, and now is in there with Teofimo Lopez. And if we remember, what does Teofimo Lopez do good at? He's good when somebody comes at him and fights, and he has an aggressive, you know, top-tier boxer coming at him. He's not good when he has somebody he's not expecting to be as good, and they're boxing off the back foot and competing and outboxing them potentially, like we saw against Jimmy Ortiz. That was not a good Teofimo we saw in there. So this could very much end up being an Arnold Barboza win. I wouldn't be surprised at all. You would have to think Teofimo is definitely the favorite and can get it, and especially maybe even capable of a decision just because he is from New York. But, you know, we'll see. I think that's a brilliant fight. I think Ryan and Rolly is a great fight just because they're both such big punchers. I think it could be really entertaining. I think, again, that one, you know, Rolly is a very big puncher, so he still stands a chance, you know, at upsetting. And then Devin and Jose, I think, will be good. I know some people are saying, oh, you know, Devin is probably going to be a little bit shy, you know, after the Ryan Garcia essentially loss. You know, Jose is probably a bigger man and stuff. Devin's coming up to 147 already. But I still think Devin Haney is by far, as of right now, the more supreme fighter. Jose Ramirez is certainly on his way out. He's not what he used to be. I think Devin Haney will confidently, I would say, probably will win this fight. But yeah, pretty good press conference there. Then today we have Canelo Alvarez, William Scull. You know, again, not a ton going on. It seems Canelo at some point was trying to get under Scull's skin a little bit. I don't know if I'd say get under his skin, but just kind of little bro him in a way and say, oh, you know, speak louder into the microphone. Like, stuff like that, you know, just kind of like, you know, saying, oh, yeah, viva Mexico, cabrones. I love that. But, you know, Skull, I was a little bit disappointed in. First of all, he's a lot bigger than I expected. He is way bigger than Canelo is. He's almost a head taller than him, essentially. Just seems much larger. He made Canelo look really small up there. And, I mean, just, I would have liked to see him, you know, bring in a little bit more of himself there. Because this is, there's no shadow of a doubt here that this is the Canelo show. And Skull was his tune-up fight. But it didn't even seem like Skull was fighting for that, saying, oh, no, I'm not a tune-up fight. I'm going to beat him and stuff. He was kind of like, eh. Like, no, dude, they're calling you the challenger up there. You're a champion still. You still have that IBF belt. Yeah, you're pretty much the challenger. But don't have a challenger mentality. I am the champion already. He's got belts. I've got a belt. I'm trying to take his. He's trying to take mine. I'm not the B-side, even though you are. I'm not the challenger. Don't treat me like one. That's the mentality you got to have up there. And that'll get, although you don't want to piss off Canelo. This could be a game plan from Skull as well by like making Canelo think, oh, this is easy. Got a bigger fight down the line with Crawford. She's going to go out there, you know, stretch my legs, knock this guy out. Skull is, you know, somebody that is going to try and outbox Canelo and is going to try and stick around him and, you know, and not get into the pocket too much, which is definitely not a good idea with Canelo. He's still a very big puncher. But, and it's possible, you know, but I don't think there's any way that Skull wins this fight realistically. You know, not a ton of interest. It was an okay press conference. Not really much was said. It was pretty short. They did confirm over that Jaime Munguia, Bruno Saras, the rematch will be the co-main event. I love that Jaime Munguia is running it straight back. I think that he will win this time. You know, not to give any, you know, not to take any credit away from Bruno Saras, but that was a lucky shot he landed. And I think Munguia will, you know, perform better this time around. But I'm still very excited for it. And then, of course, you also have no other confirmations for this undercard. We've heard Yoenli Hernandez is to face Shane Mosley Jr. What I just have to assume to be a WBA eliminator, if not even an interim title, because they are number one and two in the WBA, I believe. The winner of that fight has to fight Arislandi Lara, and I think that will happen. But we don't know yet who else is on this undercard aside from the co-main event, but excited to hear more about it in the coming weeks, potentially months. Okay, let's do a little bit of talk about Tank Roach. So there was a technical issue that prevented the replay in the with the knee. That's utter BS. That's really fishy from New York because there's about 30 monitors around that ring, not just the commissions that was on the Fritz. They literally could have pulled up on their phone the pay-per-view and, like, backed it up a little bit and checked it. I mean, or just walked over to anybody else's monitor. It's so stupid. But that's what they say. The WBA backed Tank on their website from some collaborator, apparently. And then the president took it back and said, that's not us at all. Even though I'm sure that they do back him. You know, it's not like the WBA is officially supporting Tank in this situation. And Roach's lawyer requested the New York Commission to overturn the result. I'm just saying, every day, it seems more and more likely that this genuinely could get overturned. Do we see stuff get overturned often? No, but this was a really weird call, and that knee very much could get overturned to an knockdown, and if so, Tank loses that fight. Regardless, we need to run this fight back again. I know that's the plan. I know that's what's going to happen. I have faith, but yeah, it could get very interesting. I still am just in disbelief that Tank didn't win that fight and that Lamon Roach was able to pull off a draw. And even just go the distance. So, very impressed by him. Okay. Huge. I'll talk about this one last thing before we go through the preview. Inoue versus Cardenas is set for May 4th in Las Vegas on that Sunday. So, we're going to have a huge Cinco de Mayo weekend. And then MJ Akhmadaliev is set for in Tokyo on September 14th. That'll also be another Sunday, the day after Canelo fights Terrence Crawford. So, he's going to fight back-to-back with Canelo twice this year, which is awesome. I like that plan. I heard, did see somebody say that the MJ fight is not in Tokyo? I don't know where they got that from. I believe it is. I don't know if MJ has agreed yet, but I assume it's pretty close, if not agreed. I'm not mad at this plan. I would have liked to fight MJ now, but it's whatever. Cardenas is still a pretty good fighter. He's still a pretty good contender in the division. Do you think there are other guys that could have fought in a way now? Yeah, but it's whatever. Okay, let's talk about this weekend. Not a ton of huge fights outside of UFC, but there are some good cards. Let's talk about them. So my favorite fighter in the UFC, the light heavyweight champion, Alex Poatan Pereira, returns to the cage Saturday, March 8th, defending his strap against Magomed Ankalaev. This fight is going to be competitive, and I am worried for Poatan. Do I think that Poatan will win? I have faith that he will. I think he's a fantastic fighter, but I'm really worried that Ankalaev is just going to wrestle him and Pereira is not going to be able to do much. We know Pereira is not a wrestler. We know that he's dangerous power, and we know that Ankalaev is a very strong guy as well. But, yeah, I am a little bit concerned, especially just even with their training regimen. It seems like Ankalaev is locked in and Pereira hasn't been. You know, I mean, he's had a very easy run over the last year or so. I mean, the Yuri and Jamal fights, he barely had to do anything. Clear Roundtree had to fight for it, but he was still able to just win that just by gritting it out and being the bigger and stronger guy. Ankalaev, he's in there with a monster, dude. Ankalaev is going to wrestle Pereira, and he has the potential to just dominate him on the ground, and I'm really worried about that happening. I loved Pereira. I think that he is such an exciting and fun character in the UFC. He's my favorite fighter. He's such a force. He's so powerful. And, I mean, we saw it this week. Dana White said the plan is to do John Jones, Tom Aspinall in the summer. And then from there, it's possible that Alex Pereira can fight the winner at heavyweight. I need Pereira to win. Not only do I want him to win, I need him to. I'm going to pick Pereira to win this fight by knockout. I don't even know if it's going to happen, but I'm going to will it into existence because I want it to happen. I'm excited. I'm expecting war. I'm just going to say right now, I'm out of town this weekend. I'm not going to be able to be covering these fights live. In fact, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to watch Pereira Ankalaev live, which sucks. I'm going to watch it first thing in the morning whenever I have the chance to because I'm itching to watch that fight. Co-main event, Justin Gaethje, Rafael Fiziev. I'm going to be honest. I think Justin Gaethje is going to walk all over him. He's already beaten him once. This is Gaethje's return fight after the Max Holloway defeat. Fiziev, I can't even remember when the last time he fought was. Not saying it wasn't. It was like a long time ago. I just don't really remember. But this was meant to be Gaethje-Hooker. That was going to be a war. Now it's Gaethje-Fiziev on short notice. Only 3 rounds as opposed to 5. I just don't think that Fiziev is going to be able to really bring too much in on what 10 days notice. So, yeah, I'm going to take Justin Gaethje in this rematch. Other than that, there's not really a ton of other great fights on that card, if I'm being honest. Let me pull up the card here. But this is something I've noticed the UFC's kind of been doing, at least lately, is we had 311, which was a huge card, and then 312 and 313 are both kind of mild. Not a lot of fights on it outside of the main and co-main event. And then 314 looks like it's going to be huge. 315 may not be as big. So it's going to be really interesting to see if this is like a new strategy they're doing. So you got Jalen Turner versus Ignacio Bahamondes. That'll be a lightweight bout. Turner is number 13 in lightweight. Bahamondes isn't even ranked, and that's the feature fight on the card. Then you've got Amanda Lemos versus Yasmin Lucindo, both Brazilians. Number 5 and number 7 in women's strawweight. So very competitive match there, very highly ranked. So that one should be good. And then opening up the card is King Green versus Mauricio Ruffy, which should be a great fight. Neither of them are ranked, but it should be a pretty good one. And then featured prelim, you have Curtis Blaydes versus Rizvan Kuniev. Blaydes is number 5 as a heavyweight, and Kuniev isn't even ranked, so I don't know why he's fighting someone who's not ranked. But, not a super special card or anything, but one that I'm sure will actually still be entertaining, so I'm excited for it nonetheless. Probably the best card of the weekend, in my opinion at least, is tomorrow's card at Royal Albert Hall, headlined by Natasha Jonas, Lauren Price. Listen, this is a competitive fight. It is. Both women are champions with multiple divisions. I know Jonas is WBC, WBA, or WBO, and then, WBC, IBF. WBO is Michaela Mayer at the moment, who's not fighting in this. She's fighting Sandy Ryan in a rematch at the end of the month. And then Lauren Price is the WBA, IBO, and Ring Magazine champion. So she only has one of the legitimate 4 belts, but, she's still bringing her own hardware into the match. As for who wins, I've said this for the past few months now, and I'm going to keep saying it. I totally expect Lauren Price to win this fight. She is the younger, hungrier fighter. If you saw her fight in December, she absolutely ran through her opponent. I think her name was Mateus. I mean, just obliterated her. I think she knocked her out in 2 or 3 rounds. Brilliant stuff. Natasha Jonas, I thought, totally lost to Michaela Mayer. In fact, that was one of the worst robberies of 2024. I thought maybe the worst. I totally thought that she lost that fight. And I just think that Price is going to do the number on her. And I don't think that she'll stop her, but I think she's going to beat her. I mean, Natasha Jonas is one of the oldest champions in the sport right now. I think she's like 42 or something like that. Lauren Price is not. Lauren Price is 30 or so. So, yeah, I definitely think that Lauren Price is going to win this fight, probably by unanimous decision. and is going to take those belts and move into an undisputed championship later this year. That's just how I see it. Co-main event, Caroline Dubois versus, let me pull up her name. Last name is Shin, and I don't want to get the rest of the name wrong. But, you know, I'm expecting another dominant Caroline Dubois performance. Listen, after this fight, she's got to be in unifications. It's just ridiculous how she's not at this point. I know that she's taking this fight on relatively short notice, about a month or so. And I only say short notice because she did just fight in January. So I'm happy that she's returning already. But I'm not really expecting too much opposition here. I'm expecting her to do pretty good in taking care of her mandatory. And then I really want her to fight another champion. Whether that be a Beatriz Ferreira, Terry Harper, whoever. Terry Harper's going to be busy May 23rd. But I don't think that Beatriz Ferreira will. So Caroline Dubois, I expect, will definitely beat Bo Mi Rei Shin. Yeah, and then we'll see what goes on from there. What else is on that card? You've got Karis Artingstall versus Raven Chapman. That one, it's weird, you know. These are two fighters that I've never been like, oh, man, I'm such a big fan of them. I just think that that's a 50-50 fight. Raven Chapman has only lost once. It was her last fight, and it was to Skye Nicholson, who's one of the best female fighters in the world right now. And she is and that was in a world title fight. Chapman is coming off that and going in with Karis Artingstall, who's only had 6 professional fights, who's looked pretty good until that point, but this is a very good 50-50 fight. They fight for the British Featherweight Championship. As for who wins, it's really hard to say because I think that Artingstall is a very good talent, but I do think that Chapman is more experienced at a higher level. In fact, I don't even think Artingstall has fought a 10-rounder yet. So I'm going to pick Chapman, but, you know, Artingstall will definitely has a very good chance to win. I think she's the favorite, but I'm just going to pick Chapman because why not? You also have Cindy Ngama will not be fighting on this card. She was an Olympian meant to make her debut in an 8-rounder against a former European champion. So, you know, they are expecting to fast-track her. She got injured or was not able to pass a medical exam the other day, so she's off the card. You've also got Chloe Watson versus Jasmine Zapatochna. That would be for Watson's EBU European Flyweight Championship. Chloe Watson's a pretty good fighter. Hasn't been able to get a lot of big fights recently. Zapatochna is coming off the win over Maisie Rose Courtney in July of 2024. So, yeah, this one should be pretty good. I expect Chloe Watson to win. And then there, I mean, she could honestly move closer towards a world title shot. And then you've got Francesca Hennessy versus Gemma Ruegg. You know, a fight that she should definitely win. Ruegg is 8-12-1, so not good at all. But they fight for Hennessy's WBA Intercontinental Super Bantamweight Championship over 8 rounds. So, you know, Fran Hennessy's already got herself a world title. Or not a world title, excuse me, a regional title. She won that in her last fight, in just her 5th fight. So, yeah, excited for that one. Also, tomorrow, we have Harlem Eubank versus Tyrone McKenna. On top of a pretty good Washington card, a lot of good prospects on that card, most notably Tom Welland and Dan Toward, who are great. And then you've also got Michael Conlan returning. Mick Conlan, he is in with, last name is Khan. I'm going to double check what the first name is. It's Asad Asif Khan. This is one that I definitely expect Mick to win. If he doesn't, he's done. I totally see him losing just because it seems like he may be shot, but it's just an 8-rounder, 130. Khan is 19-5-1, so not a horrific record, but he's not a great one. He's on a 4-fight win streak, however. So, and there's upside possibilities here. I expect Conlan to win, and we just heard that if Conlan does win, Eddie Hearn said he was interested in making the Josh Warrington fight. I love that fight. Winner or loser, and maybe even winner as well, should retire after that. But main event, Harlem Eubank, Tyrone McKenna. This is a awesome fight. Eubank is moving up to 147. He's in with Tyrone McKenna, who just had a really good win against Dylan Moran. I think this is a brilliant, brilliant fight that Wasserman and Conlan Boxing made here. I'm just going to jump straight into it. I think that Eubank will probably win. It's over 12 rounds. They fight for the IBF Intercontinental Championship, I believe. So winner will have a good ranking with them. Champion Jerome Bruce Ennis, of course. Eubank has been looking for a big fight. This is definitely his biggest and toughest fight yet, I'd have to think. I think it's a really good matchup. I think Tyrone McKenna certainly is the possibility to upset Eubank here, but I'm going to pick Harlem Eubank to win this one regardless. Also tomorrow, we have Albert Batyrgaziev returning against Nery Cruz Romero. That will be in Moscow for the WBA Interim Super Featherweight Championship, as well as the IBA Pro World Championship. But Yeah, I expect Batur Gaziev to win this one. I actually think that they're both undefeated. So that should be pretty good. Yeah, they both are. Batur Gaziev only 11-0. Romero is 18-0. Of course, over 12 rounds. On top of, I think, 8 fights on that undercard as well. Nothing really notable on it, but, you know, pretty good IBA card. I expect Batur Gaziev to win this one. And then I honestly expect the winner of this fight to get upgraded to full champion. I really do. Because, you know, Lamont Roach is the WBA champion at 130. He's busy at 135. He just fought Tank. He's probably going to fight him again. The WBA obviously allowed Roach to move up this one time, but they may say, all right, you're going to do it again. We're going to at least make you champion in recess if they do that and allow Batur Gaziev to become the full champion. So be very interesting. Regardless, once Roach returns to 130, he will certainly have to face Batur Gaziev. So big implications for this fight. And Lamont Roach is a much bigger name now than he ever was before. So big fights ahead for the potential future champion Batur Gaziev or Romero. Actually going on right now as I'm recording this and when I upload it, there's a Golden Boy Fight Night in Indio, California, of course, headlined by Gucci Manny Flores. He returns against Jorge Leyva over 10 rounds, I believe at 122. If that's right, I think that that's the division where Manny Flores operates in. Where is he? Yeah, the fight is, apologize, the fight is over bantamweight, excuse me. So Manny Flores is, you know, he continues to fight 10 rounders. I'd have to assume they can get him a pretty decent fight next. He's still a prospect for sure, but you know, we'll see what they do with him. Younger brother Grant Flores, who is a knockout machine, he's 8-0 with 6 knockouts. I say he's a machine because he has a lot of them, but he's also good at getting good ones. He's in over 6 rounds with Laquan Evans, Sugar Boy. I think, is that Sugar? Jonathan Cañas. I think he's the Sugar guy. I can't remember. But Johnny Cañas returns. Federico Pacheco makes his Golden Boy debut. He's obviously the brother of Diego Pacheco. And then you also have the pro debut of Ruslan Abdullayev, who Golden Boy just signed. They signed a few fighters, including Kaden Griffiths and Javier Meza. And I think one other one, I think his name was Gabriel Castellano, if that's right. I think I may have gotten that one wrong, but I believe his last name is Castellano. Golden Boy does this a lot, where guys like Griffiths and Meza, I assumed were already signed with Golden Boy. Turns out they're not. They haven't been. But, you know, Golden Boy has all these prospects. They develop them on their shows, and then they don't end up actually signing them for a while. After once they fought exclusively on Golden Boy for like a year and a half. So it's really weird. But anyways, they've signed a few new fighters. I think this is a pretty good fight night, actually, for Golden Boy. A lot of exciting and fun prospects to watch. So after this is over, I'll probably turn that on. I'll move through it pretty quickly because I'm expecting there'll be a good amount of knockouts, and they're all short fights, aside from the main event. Also tomorrow, most valuable prospects returns. Lucas Body returns, most specifically. He's in with Ryan James Rakaza, another undefeated opponent, the third straight undefeated opponent for Lucas Body. As you remember, he was able to knock out in a crazy, on my pick for the knockout of the year, win over Ashton H2O Silve. You know, H2O is one of the best prospects in the sport. We haven't seen him return since then. Body was able to get signed by MVP. He had a fight against Casamonica that he very narrowly won, kind of controversial, on the Jake Paul Mike Tyson prelims. But he returns. He's Canadian. They're doing it up north in Toronto. Sarah Bailey versus Christina Navarro in the coming event. That'll be for the WBA Light Flyweight or Super Flyweight World Championship. I can't remember which one it is. Tamtha Bolt, we mentioned, an Olympian. She returns. She's a very fun fighter to watch. Very good. She's fighting 3-minute rounds as well as a professional. So she's in with Sonia Drayling, who's been in with some notable fighters like O'Shea Jones and Mary Spencer. As of recent, and excited to see that fight. Mark Smither versus Jaime Cuesta will also be on the main card. And some other good fights. So I'm just expecting a pretty good fight card. The prospects cards are usually pretty entertaining. And then on Saturday, you have a Pro Box TV card, which should be pretty good. Arnold Cagay versus Joey Gonzalez. Cagay is number 2 with the WBO at featherweight. So very good fighters. Sure to get a title shot relatively soon in the next year or so. Hopefully, at least you can get some big fights. Co-main event, you have got Nicholas Walters returning. He's in with Luis Torres. That should be a really good, exciting matchup. Jesus Sriracha versus Luis Lopez on the card. Kelvin Davis actually was supposed to fight on the card, but on BoxRec, it seems he's not on there anymore, so maybe he's got taken out, but I think that was going to be his first 10-rounder. You know, some other good fights that are slated for the fight card, some other good fighters, so we'll see what happens, if anything big happens on that card, but ProBox is obviously always fun to watch. That's it with all the preview. Now let's go into some headlines. I know it's been a long episode already. We'll try and move through this quickly. Dillian White is out of the Joe Joyce fight. At first, it seemed that Jermaine Franklin was being discussed to be brought in. Now it seems that Filip Hrgović is locked and loaded for his return fight, which Joyce versus Hrgović is a brilliant fight, I think, for both, honestly. Joyce needs to come back into a big fight. He's meant to be Dillian White. Hrgović is by far a tougher opponent. You know, Hrgović is one of those guys that was a top 10, maybe even top 5 heavyweight before he lost to Daniel Dubois. And again, that Daniel Dubois fight, yeah, he was definitely losing, but he didn't get knocked out or anything. He got stopped because of cuts. You know, so you can't really help that too much. He's still a very good fighter. Is he a top-tier heavyweight, you know, world champion? No, but he's very good. He's definitely probably, once he returns, he'll probably be still like a top 10 guy at heavyweight. And I think that he'll definitely beat Joe Joyce. So I'd be shocked if this is the point, if this is the fight, but I love it. And once Hrgović likely beats Joyce, I think it is time to go. But I think there's a really good replacement opponent for Queensberry to bring in. Also want to mention, Queensberry seems to be the only big promotion involved with the Canelo Skull card. You know, as we know, Matchroom is going to be working on the Times Square card as well as the Eubank Ben card, which also involves Boxer, and you've got Golden Boy Top Rank on the Times Square card. Not even a Matchroom fighter on the Times Square card, but there's no Queensberry fighter on either of those cards. And I think that they still have a good relationship with His Excellency. His Excellency and team probably wanted a big promotion behind it, and neither of the guys in the main event are locked down with anyone. So they probably just said, hey, Frank, you want to promote this? And he's like, yeah. So, you know, it's a little bit odd, I think, that Frank is promoting the card. But, you know, I whatever. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, they were the only ones that have posted anything, and they were mentioned by Buffer at the press conference, in addition to Canelo Promotions, Aegon Sports, who represents William Skull, and then, of course, Sella. But nobody else was mentioned as a big promoter. We know Jaime Munguia is fighting on the undercard. He's represented by Zanfer and Top Rank, so they may be mentioned as well later on, and there could be other fighters added to the card. But as of right now, it seems that Queensberry is going to be, like, the only big promotion that's really, like, spearheading and promoting the event. You know, Top Rank will pretty much only be promoting Jaime Munguia, probably. Okay, what else do we have here? Jai Pitaya returning soon. So I actually got into a little bit of a back and forth with Tasman Fighters on X, just because I said they tweeted that Jai Pitaya is going to be returning, and I said I don't like this because we know what the IBF does. They allow you a they give you a mandatory, then they allow you a voluntary, and the fact that Jai is going to be returning, and we just heard that Zerto will be fighting Uniel Dorticos likely on June 28th, which, by the way, I initially heard April 19th. I don't know what happened there, that it got pushed back so far, but I'm upset by it because I really want to see that fight, you know, soon. But it's whatever. I just want to see Zerto and Dorticos get it out of the way so that Zerto can fight Opataya. And I don't hate that Opataya is going to take a fight in the interim, just in terms of, you know, wanting to stay active and not wait around. So I like that. However, I'm worried, and Tasman Fighters didn't really understand this and saying I was inaccurate, but I'm worried that what's going to happen is that they obviously, Jai Pitaya succeeded his mandatory in January by knocking out David Naika. After that, he's allowed a voluntary. That voluntary needs to be Zerto Ramirez, because if he takes a voluntary, then in like October when it's time to fight Zerto, they're going to be ready to go, and then IBF is going to say, you have to fight so-and-so, and you have to fight him, otherwise we're stripping you. And then the Zerto fight gets put on the back burner again. Zerto, he gets to go, goes and gets another fight 6 months later. Opataya's got to wait around, and the cycle just continues of him being offbeat with getting this fight done. I know it sucks to sit out of the ring for 9 months, but, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know if the IBF is going to be, IBF is not willy-nilly about this, and they may not grant Opataya the extension to go and get a unification. They really should, because he deserves one. But I want to see Opataya unify first and foremost, even more so than staying active. Huey Fury is apparently now going to be on the May 23rd card as opposed to the April 4th GBM show. He's announced for the Or Call card, headlined by Pitters and Dos Santos. He has now been moved on to the big show that they're doing in May. That is the Terry Harper, Natalie Zimmerman card, which I think makes more sense. That's a huge card. The April 4th card is still pretty good, but May 23rd actually looks like it's going to be a really, very good show for British boxing that really competes at a big level. So excited for that. Amanda Serrano signed a lifetime deal with MVP. We just talked about her obviously getting announced to fight Katie Taylor. Just the other day it was announced that she signed a lifetime deal, which I don't know if that's ever been done before, where she's going to be fighting under MVP for the rest of her career. And then after that, she'll be on their like headline, heading a board for, you know, like women's fighters or whatever, you know, their operations or whatever. So very happy for her. She's probably my favorite female fighter. Yeah, and so she signs a lifetime deal with MVP, first of its kind. Yeah, but they're paying her very well. Josh Taylor, Echo Essamin, is confirmed for May 24th at the OVO Hydro in Glasgow. By the way, I just want to say that card is pretty disappointing. I was expecting, you know, we've got some good fights there. I mean, Collins and McGregor is a brilliant fight. Alloys returns. Other than that, because those were already announced, there's just a lot of prospects on that card. So I'm very disappointed with how that card looks, because I thought it was going to be brilliant. Doesn't look awesome. John Jones, we talked about that, is going to return in the summer. The plan is Aspinall with Pereira versus the winner. We don't know if that's going to come through, just knowing John Jones, but I hope so. The WBC has now officially ordered Bivol to fight Benavidez. We also know the IBF ordered Beterbiev versus Effort before Beterbiev lost those belts to Bivol. So we don't know if they may enact their, you know, right there and say, hey, no, we're first in the cycle. He's got to fight Eifert first, even though everyone wants to see Bivol Benavidez, not Bivol Eifert. And more than both those, we want to see Bivol Beterbiev 3. So, you know, 175 is really confusing as to what is going to happen next. I just hope they do Bivol Beterbiev and then Bivol Benavidez, if I'm being honest. The WBA have ordered Kubrat Pulev to defend his regular title versus Fabio Wardley. The winner will have to defend that against Michael Hunter within 120 days, and then also Alexander Usyk has been granted a 2-year extension without getting any mandatory ordered by the WBA while he goes and, you know, pursues bigger fights and fights with the guys, essentially saying that he won't have to defend his belts for the rest of his career because he's only going to fight like one more year. So I'm pretty disappointed, not disappointed that they're not going to order Usyk against anyone. I don't really care about that, but I'm kind of disappointed that they just don't care at all about ordering their opponents. You got IBF, who is way too strict, and they got the WBA, who's way too lenient. So they got to figure their stuff out. And, you know, maybe TKO coming in and starting a new boxing league is good to eliminate stuff like that. But Pulev Wardley, we've known that this could potentially be the move for Queensberry to make with Fabio Wardley. We know that they want to get him a bigger than a British fight. I think he's already vacated the British title, or at least will soon. And then we also know that he is going to, you know, he's very highly ranked with the WBA. I think he's number one. We knew he was going to push for a bigger fight. Kubrat Pulev, that way you get a world title. Then you fight Michael Hunter after. Those are two fights that you definitely want to favor Wardley in. He gets to be grow his stock power. He gets to have bigger fights, but not fights that he'll be an underdog in, and gets to be a world champion technically. So this is definitely the move to make for him, I think. And I love Fabio Wardley. He's one of my favorite heavyweights. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. The first crop of Grand Prix fighters have been announced. I'm not really going to read any of them because they've announced like 50 by now. But yeah, a lot of fighters coming through. I think the divisions they're doing are, I think it's featherweight, super lightweight, middleweight, and heavyweight. They've announced guys from across all of them. It really is very international. There's tons of countries involved that I'm seeing announced. Nobody that's really, I even really recognize the names of that much. But I'm just excited to see this concept come through. Apparently, set for Friday, which is tomorrow, Matchroom are going to announce the Dalton Smith Sheffield show for April 19th. We still don't know who he's fighting. I really have no idea. And then also going to do Johnny Fisher, David Allen 2, which will be on May 17th, apparently. We don't know where, but that'll be announced on Friday with a press conference as well. That Dave Allen said there'll be a press conference on Friday to announce the Johnny Fisher rematch. So, yeah, those are definitely going to get announced tomorrow, which I'm excited for. I'm very excited for Fisher Allen 2 and to see who Smith is going to fight. I think it's good to get Smith active again, and I think it's good for them to immediately run back Fisher and Allen. No Limit Boxing announced their schedule. They had some like launch for their season, which I think is a little bit weird, but you know, let's look at it. They've got a lot of fight cards coming up. They didn't announce specific fights, but we know March 12th, they have Keith Thurman, Brock Jarvis. We know that April 6th, they have Tim Zhu, Joey Spencer. They then have a card in May. What was the date? I think it's May 14th, which will be another Wednesday card. That'll be a pay-per-view for them. You know, they have lots of pay-per-views in Australia. I think June 11th was the date that they have another card on Wednesday, also pay-per-view. July 6th, which will be a Sunday, is going to be another pay-per-view, and we'll talk about in a minute about what that is. And then July 23rd, they have a No Limit on Fox card. They had locations there, but I can't actually, for some reason, pull up the schedule at the moment. Oh, wait, no, here it is. Yeah, okay. So the May 14th will be Sydney, June 11th will be Cairns, July 6th will be Gold Coast, and July 23rd will be Brisbane. I'll tell you right now, July 6th, that's a Sunday. Similar to the Zhu Spencer card being on a Sunday, that'll be actually Sunday morning there, Saturday night here in the U.S., and that one will be the Thurman and Zhu colliding fight. I just saw a clip of Keith Thurman and Brock Jarvis kind of arguing at their open workout. They've got some real spite and heat there. I definitely expect Keith Thurman should win this fight. I'd be disappointed if he didn't, but you know, we know the plan is for them to do Keith Thurman and Tim Zhu fighting this summer, and it literally looks like July 6th will be that, and I wouldn't be surprised if Keith Thurman beats Jarvis and Zhu beats Spencer, that they, after immediately after Zhu beats Spencer, that they announce Thurman Zhu, or Zhu Thurman, for July. Okay, Vladimir Klitschko apparently wants to return at 49. Tom Loeffler told that to the Ring magazine. I don't know if Loeffler represented Klitschko or something, or knows him or whatever, but apparently Klitschko is interested in returning at 49. He shouldn't. I don't even want to talk about this. It's just a stupid idea. We saw it out of Mike Tyson. I know Klitschko is younger, but it doesn't matter. It's just stupid. Odabek Komotov is set to return on the Janibek card. I like that. This Janibek card is actually looking really good. I didn't think it was going to be good, but we got Arsene Gulamirian on it. We've got Bakhtir Jalalev on it. We've got Sultan Zarbek in the coming event. I don't know if all of these people have been confirmed, like announced, but we're just hearing that they're all going to be on it. Komotov on it as well. I mean, he had a very good performance against Ray Ford until he got stopped with 7 seconds to go. He was winning that fight on two of the scorecards. So I don't know why he hasn't been out of the ring, hasn't been back in the ring since then. It's been, you know, over a year at this point, but, you know, good to see him coming back. Andrew Maloney is targeting Fumalele Kafu's WBO 115 final. Obviously, Kafu and Chuck Liddell were in negotiations, and that fell through at the 11th hour, and it seems Maloney's interested in going to South Africa. I love that fight. Maloney is still a good fighter, you know, who had a very close loss to Pedro Guevara. Wouldn't be mad at all if he fought Kafu next. Eddie Hearn said he's close to retirement. I didn't really see that clip, so I don't know the specifics of it, but I think that's very surprising. I think he's only in his 40s. Maybe he's close to 50, but if you look at Frank Warren, who's in his 70s, you look at Bob Arum, who's 93, 94, I hope Hearn stays in it for a while because he's still sharp. He's still great, but I get it. You know, he's got kids. If he wants to retire, I understand why. It'll just suck because he is the best promoter in the game right now, at least in terms of talking and stuff like that. Okay, a few more topics, and then we'll wrap it up. This almost like an hour long now, so we'll wrap it up. Raul Rosas Jr. versus Vince Morales was added to March 29th. I'd like to see that. Rosas is coming back. You know, he's a very good prospect in the UFC. Really fun fighter. Chee wee wees. Yeah. Good to see he's coming back on a fight night as well. Sergey Kovalev versus Artur Mann on April 19th. Looks like it'll be happening on an IBA Pro card potentially. So that's exciting. To see Kovalev come back. Odd that Robin Safar has not yet had a fight since then, just because I thought he would have gotten one much sooner, but he obviously is going to return before then on March 29th on the Zepeda undercard. The Last Crescendo only sold 45,000 pay-per-view buys. That's really surprising, I'm going to be honest. Actually, it's not, because there wasn't a lot of American star power besides Shakur Stevenson and maybe Virgil Ortiz, and they fought, you know, it was in like the middle of the days when they fought. Not U.S. primetime. It wasn't really catered to U.S. audience. I'm sure they sold more in the U.K. and other places overall. But, you know, that card was special because of how many fighters were on it, but not in terms of star power per se. And the fact of the matter is that the U.S. will only, right now, it's not like the UFC, they'll only pay for a fight card if it's guys that they're huge fans of, like Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis, Canelo Alvarez. Maybe not even Terrence Crawford they buy pay-per-views for. Not even always Tank. So it's crazy. But there's just so much pirating and stuff. And these guys weren't American superstars. So hopefully that model and that mindset will change with TKO. Sean Porter versus Ray Jack, apparently. You know, Ray Jack is a really funny guy on boxing Twitter. Apparently he and Sean Porter are actually, this is like legit, they're going to have a sparring match broadcast live. That's just so stupid. Sean Porter's just going to beat the hell out of him. But it's going to be funny, so we'll see what happens. And then the last thing we'll talk about, I just saw that Eddie Reynoso, during the face-off, brought the WBC championship belt up on the stage with His Excellency doing the face-off, where he was holding the Ring Magazine and the Undisputed belt that Saudi makes. And they asked, oh, you, like, Eddie walked up, oh, you want this belt? And Turkey looked at him and shook his head. Because, like, oh, okay. So, did not want the WBC championship up there, which I like. You know, I'm fine with that. I'd like to see have all the belts, but it's just really interesting that they are totally pushing him out and saying, no, we don't want it. Only our belts. Only one belt. It was two up there, but they mean the same thing. So that's all I've got. Very long episode. Yeah, for a while. It's an hour long. Probably won't have another episode until Tuesday, and a very long episode when I get caught up on all the fights this weekend. Enjoy the fights. I'll be watching them whenever I can. Probably going to get caught up on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Thank you so much for listening. A lot of stuff to talk about today. His Excellency is taking over with Dana White and changing the sport. There is so much more to come from that situation. We'll hear about in the coming weeks, months, years. Thanks for listening. Peace out.